Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to That Gabby Roslin Podcast, part of the Acast Creator Network. Nick Mohammed is my guest this week, most recently known and loved for his Emmy-nominated role of Nathan in the multi-award-winning Ted Lasso and Joseph in Intelligence with David Schwimmer. He talks about filming with Jon Hamm and Tina Fey. We chat about his character, Mr. Swallow, how he started out in the industry, his love of magic and his brilliant books about magic, and most importantly, his family. Nick is such a great guy with the best sense of humour and another of those rare people who have that wonderful twinkle in their eyes. I do hope you enjoy listening. Please, can I ask you a favour? Would you mind following and subscribing, please? By clicking the follow or subscribe button. This is completely and utterly free, by the way. And you can also rate and review on Apple Podcasts, which is the purple app on your iPhone or iPad. Simply scroll down to the bottom of all of the episodes. I know there have been quite a few now. And you'll see the stars where you can tap and rate and also please write a review. Thank you so much. Hello.
Hey, Gabby. How are you?
I'm really well. And you know what I've just been doing? And I just thought I have to share it with you.
Yes.
I've been hanging. It's really so showbiz lives that we really lead. Hey.
Yeah.
I was hanging up my washing, listening to Mr. Swallow singing Jurassic Park and Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I mean, I can only apologize for that.
Please don't, because your Jurassic Park, well, not yours, Mr. Swallow, of course, because Mr. Swallow is your ventriloquist dummy, I suppose, in many ways. Mr. Swallow singing is a, please will you sing for, well, will Mr. Swallow just sing for me to start this podcast off, please, because it will just make my day.
Okay, hang on. I mean, it's not too early. It's 10:30, so that's fine. Hang
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh no, what's that? I mean, that's all I'm probably going to be able to manage at this point without disturbing my neighbour. I mean, also, huge credit to John Williams. I mean, I feel like I get a lot of kind of attention off the back of this, but I very much stole his tune and had just put some very piddly little words to it. And I feel like I kind of reap some kind of benefit. But hats off to the genius that is John Williams, of course.
Do you know what's so funny is that, and like, everybody will know Mr. Swallow and love Mr. Swallow, but people who are tuning in because they're a huge fans of Ted Lasso will think, what the hell?
Oh, I mean, I've just started doing a few kind of live gigs again, and I did one before Christmas, and it was a kind of strange old thing because it was the first time that I'd said, oh, I'm going to do a gig, and then realised that actually people who were just fans of Ted Lasso had come along. And obviously they were not getting what they were expecting, which I quietly enjoyed.
Yes.
But yeah.
So do I. Do you know, that's the thing about surprising people. Oh, can we just another little bit of Mr. Swallow, and then we'll talk about Mr. Swallow, but he doesn't need to sing again. But okay. It's just...
Well, Mr. Swallow was basically based on a teacher. It is my old English teacher. And she, I'm not named who she is because I don't want to cause any offence. And if I'm honest, I think she's passed away.
Anyway, that's a little bit of Mr. Swallow, but that is true. So It's an homage now. But yeah.
No, you see, now I shouldn't have laughed at that bit. And I laughed at that bit. I'm very sorry that she's no longer here.
She was incredibly inspirational. I mean, let it be said, this English teacher was utterly mad, as well as in she, you know, she was, you know, she was everything kind of Mr. Swallow is. I mean, obviously, I've exaggerated certain elements, but you know, she was using her, I guess, her position as a teacher was basically a platform to just spout views about anything and everything. I mean, she used it as this huge, yeah, platform to spout views on capital punishment, on race, on, I mean, she had really extreme views on lots of things. And if you dared to disagree with her, she would take it really personally, and she would absolutely sort of jump down your throat. And I remember, and she just loved the sound of her own voice. I mean, I kind of adored her as well as found it really funny, because I remember we did Merchant of Venice. Was it Merchant of Venice or Midsummer Night's Dream? One of the Shakespeare plays for GCSE or in year nine. And she said, and she would sort of bury her head in the book. And the idea was that she would allow different, you know, pupils to sort of read the different parts. But she would never look up from the book. So she'd be like, right, who wants to play Bassanio? I'll do that then. Who wants to play, Solario? I'll do that. She never looked up. So she ended up playing all the parts in Merchant of Venice, but with that voice. And so we could never really follow it or understand what was going on, because she was playing Portia and everyone in it, basically. Shylock, you know, she's doing everyone. But yeah, an inspiration and, you know, a great person.
Did you pass your GCSE?
Well, she left when we were in year 10, I think, halfway through year 10. And then we got a great guy called Mr. Watson. So I did. Yeah, I did pass. But yeah, by that point, and it wasn't just me. It was loads of my mates do an impression of this. I was about to say the name then, but I won't. Of this teacher. And so they know who Mr. Swallow is. And, they, you know, they like that it's sort of taken on a life of its own now.
Oh,
on
that's
telly
so
and stuff.
Brilliant. Isn't it funny how teachers, there are some teachers, I remember when I was at Guildford doing the acting course, and one of our vocal coaches, again, will remain nameless, but she used to turn up with her dog that would run around the stage and a fag in her mouth. And that she'd be like, and her accent, she had a deep Scottish accent. She went, now breathe in and out, while she had a cigarette in her hand.
Wow. Can you imagine if that went on today? I mean, like, it's mad. But I love all that. I love all the characters that you kind of meet as you're growing up, and how they can be very informative. And in this case, you know, I kind of owe my career to her, really.
But was it Mr. Swallow then that you did? Because you were working. So you were temping in the day and you were gigging at night after Footlights and everything and Edinburgh. But was that as Mr. Swallow?
That was part of it. So I would do kind of various characters. I mean, I call them characters. A lot of them were just sort of me trying out different accents. But Mr. Swallow was definitely the one that was getting, I guess, the better reaction when I was sort of starting out. And then way back in, it must have been 2010, that was the first time I decided, I'd been going up to Edinburgh for 2 or 3 years with solo shows, but I decided that I would do a whole hour of Mr. Swallow, because prior to then, Mr. Swallow had like taken maybe like the last sort of 15, 20 minutes of the shows when I've been doing multi-character stuff. But it had always kind of, I guess, gone down the best. So I thought, oh, let's just try and see if I can last a whole hour as Mr. Swallow. And to be fair, I think it was quite a challenge for the audience to sit through an hour of some of the early Mr. Swallow stuff, because I was effectively having to get, you know, just like launching in a verbal attack on them sort of throughout. So Mr. Swallow was sort of part of that, but it didn't become, now pretty much the only thing I do live is if I'm on stage, I'm always as Mr. Swallow. So it absolutely took over from like 2014 onwards. I sort of effectively stopped doing multi-character stuff and just focused on Mr. Swallow.
So what would Mr. Swallow have said at the Emmy Awards?
I think... What do you mean? If he was just there?
Yeah, can you... No, the idea that Mr. Swallow, as a character, was watching you at the Emmys, up for an Emmy for Ted Lasso. I just my head was doing all sorts of things while I was listening to you singing. I thought, can you imagine what he would have said to you in the car at the Emmys?
I think he would have been like, sort of, what are you all doing? I mean,
like, I don't think he would have got it. I think like, I just don't get it. I think he would have loved seeing Kate Winslet win for Mayor of Easttown, but maybe thought that she would have passed away by now on the Titanic. You know, he just would have made loads of mistakes about the kind of the format and the process. But yeah, so, you know, huge Mr. Swallow fan. And actually, I remember when I got nominated, some friends had said, okay, if you win, and there was no chance I was going to win, but they were like, if you win, you've got to accept it as Mr. Swallow. And I was like, I can't do that. It's literally, it was the first time I was in America. They would have had no idea what was going on. But but yeah.
Oh, we will. Obviously, we're going to talk about Ted Lasso. But also, you are wonderful. So I'm very lucky to have interviewed you before. And what you do, you have that very rare thing of making someone smile. Now, I have got... So I have a pen and paper and I make notes before I interview somebody. I just sort of sort of mental notes of things I want to talk about. And I have... I'm going to put this photo out. I'm going to send it to you somehow.
Oh, no.
I'll get your number afterwards. Because I did a doodle of while I was watching. And I've realised, you know what it is? It's this huge smiley face with big eyes. And that's what you do. You just... When I knew I was interviewing you the first time on Virgin, I honestly, for the whole week, I was going, oh, my God!
Gabby, don't be silly.
No, because you do like to spread joy, and because I'm a huge fan of intelligence. See, I'm laughing at the thought of it. Intelligence with you and David,
silly.
With the swimmer.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so silly, but it's my sense of humour. It's like you rung me up and said, Gabby, you know the things that you laugh at? Can I write that and put it out on telly just for you? Because that's how it feels.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. Listen, oh, thanks, Gabby. Honestly, that you know, that does mean a lot.
It's fabulous.
It's really daft. But I've always loved that. I mean, and I mean, you know, and it's probably very evident that, you know, ever since I was a kid, because some of the sense of humour is quite childish. It's the same with Mr. Swallow. Some of that's quite childish. But yeah, I mean, with intelligence, I effectively wanted to write like a live action cartoon. You know, I wanted it to be sort of slapstick and silly and full of oddball characters and not... there was a slight feeling as well that, you know, there'd been a real trend within comedy, and don't get me wrong, I love a lot of these shows, but to tend towards comedy drama. And, you know, I think Ted Lasso falls into that bracket. You know, it can deliver emotionally and can I put out quite a powerful sort of thematic message and at the same time as sort of having jokes in it. But I felt that the market was a little sort of saturated with, you know, quite meaningful comedies. And I just wanted to do something that was absolutely, utterly daft and that it just unashamedly put comedy first and didn't try to sort of do anything but be very silly and cheeky. And, you know, we weren't afraid of pratfalls and falling off desks and things like that.
See, that's why it was joyous. It reminded me of old comedies. Now, I know that you're a fan of Dad's Army and Some Mothers Do Have 'Em and those sort of things.
French and Saunders and,
It was one... intelligence is wonderfully innocent. And I can sit down with my 14-year-old, I can sit down with my dad, and we've all got the same sense of humour. Just properly laugh. And that's something... how did you know to tickle people's funny bones?
I don't know. I don't know if you do know necessarily. I think you just have to try. And, you know, even ever since I was sort of, you know, in the sort of school playground and sort of doing sort of silly magic tricks and things like that, you know, you just, I mean, I guess ultimately it's because deep down I'm some kind of attention seeker and I just enjoy it. You know, I get great pleasure in, you know, having a laugh. And, you know, the best thing you can do is sit down with, you know, friends, family, you know, just have a really good laugh. When something really tickles you, there's no other feeling like it. And it's, you know, it's such a cliche to say, you know, laughter is the best medicine, but it really does. I mean, it really makes a difference. And nothing beats that feeling when you've just shared a great joke or moment or something has just set you off. And that feeling you get afterwards, it's just, I mean, there's probably a proper scientific thing that I don't know, that it releases something in your brain or something that is just magical. And it's a wonderful thing. And I've always enjoyed it. But it's very different when, you know, when you suddenly, well, not suddenly, because I guess my career has sort of been quite a slow burn, but you know, you're writing stuff that you know, even when I was starting out live, you write stuff and you hope that it's funny because it makes you laugh. Otherwise you wouldn't write it down on the page. But, you know, the true test is then taking it out and hoping that you can communicate it well enough such that, you know, an audience then gets it and you're sort of sharing that moment between them, because it sort of doesn't exist really without an audience to comedy. And so I think, you know, you're always learning. And I mean, one thing, and it's nice to hear that you said that you can sit down with your whole family to watch shows like Intelligence. And, you know, there's lots of shows that you can do that with. Yeah, I'm Ted Lasso. I mean, there's quite a lot of foul language in Ted Lasso, actually, and in Intelligence, to be fair. But
yeah, no, but I tell you what, my daughter's learned all of her language from your shows. So thank you for that.
Yeah, apologies. But I remember even with doing the Mr. Swallow, like the later Mr. Swallow live stuff, you could see that the audience was a mixture of kind of sort of 7-year-olds up to 70-year-olds. And it was really interesting that, you know, a lot of it would translate to all of them. And, you know, I mean, there'd be bits that certain ages might laugh at and some ages it might kind of skip over their heads or something. But on the whole, it was nice. But again, I've always loved that. I've loved watching mainstream comedies and, you know, sitting down with the family and watching them together. And, you know, I remember watching stuff when I was growing up, like, you know, the repeats of Dad's Army and Fawlty Towers, but then later like Vicar of Dibley, French and Saunders, absolutely fabulous. And we're just, you know, just absolutely loving it. And I guess at the heart of it, there's some sort of great sort of silliness. They don't sort of take themselves too seriously, but they're just brilliant comedies and sort of for everyone, really.
Do you sit down now and watch comedies with your kids? Or do you let your kids watch your comedies?
They do watch some. I mean, they're still little. They're only 6 and 4. So they've not really watched Ted Lasso as such, but they've seen bits of Intelligence, and they've seen all the Mr. Swallow stuff pretty much, and they like, you know, they know the Jurassic Park song, which is quite sort of sweet and strange, I guess. And actually, because I'm thinking of maybe doing a new live Mr. Swallow thing, which we might possibly go to Edinburgh with and go with the family. And that'll be the first time I think they'll be able to sort of sit through an hour of Mrs. Swallow. I think they're at the right ages to kind of properly enjoy it. But yeah, no, I love it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We have to obviously talk about David. Your lovely story about how you met him. I couldn't say this on the radio, but in the late 90s, the very first show that the three guys from Friends did outside of America was a show that we made called Friends with Gabby. And I had the three guys and they were secretly ensconced in a hotel in London, and they had code names because it was massive. Oh, wow. It was the big height of Friends.
Oh, yeah, in the 90s. Yeah.
And I remember telling a couple of friends of mine, and they're going, yeah, yeah. What, you're going out to eat supper with, yeah, yeah, all right, yeah, yeah. And they just swore at me. And I'd go into this hotel, I had to give the secret name. And then we'd be sitting there, and then they recorded the next day. And I remember at the end of the recording, I mean, I have to say I adored each of them for their own.
Yes.
They each had something. I've kept in touch with one of them. But David was the most serious, and I mean that. I don't mean that in a bad way. He was very, he wanted to make sure that the others were okay. He was the grown up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that is still true.
He is so, in like you say, in such a brilliant way, he is so serious about comedy. He's serious about things being done professionally, and he's serious about it being collaborative and sharing, and whilst himself being an incredibly generous performer. And, you know, it goes without saying, impeccably funny, like the best comedy bones ever, and particularly doing physical stuff as well. I mean, he's just, and you watch Friends, and, you know, we tried to, you know, try and include as much physical stuff and intelligence as we could, just because we knew how much of a physical performer he was and is. But rewatching some Friends stuff, even now, you just think, God, he's funny. He's so funny, and he just gets it. But such a caring guy. And we watched a Friends reunion, my wife and I, and we watched it not when it first went out. I think we watched it like a few months later. And it was so nostalgic and just so brilliant. But you could see, and you know, I'd spoken to David about that personally before, you know, both sort of before and after he'd filmed it. And it was just so, you could just see how supportive he was of all of those, you know, all five of them, I think, relied on him in different ways in terms of, you know, just kind of the sort of spirit of collaboration and sort of checking in on all their mental health. And, you know, he's just such a solid and brilliant guy. Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm so grateful for getting to work with him. You know, one of my first sort of big TV jobs, really, you know, and to get to work alongside him has been incredible.
Watching us, I was lucky enough because we went, obviously, when we were sorting it all out, we went actually onto the set of Friends.
Yeah.
And I can't quite believe
that
happened. It was really weird. So we met them. We were talking to them all day while they were rehearsing. And then we watched the show going out from the side. But he was fine tuning everything. And when we recorded our show, he was saying, right, can we do this here? Do you think that's going to work? How about this? You know, it was so careful.
Yeah.
And I love the idea. So share with everybody how you two ended up working together.
Yeah, well, so Julia Davis and I, who's a good friend and obviously a brilliant, brilliant comedian, actor in her own right, she had this idea of doing like a morning. Well, actually, earlier on, we had, her and Mark Wootton were working on something, and I'd been brought in to do some like improv stuff with them. And that, I mean, that was years ago. And then in like 2014, she had this idea of doing like a spoof of a morning television show. And we ended up co-writing this pilot for Channel 4, where we played, I guess, these slightly kind of rivaling morning TV sort of hosts. But it really sort of centered around the idea of a woman in the media of a certain age, basically going through a massive midlife crisis and it being made suddenly very public in the media. You know, it's very kind of relevant sort of to today, to be honest. But but it sadly didn't ultimately get picked up by Channel 4 in the end. But as part of that process, David had ended up seeing the pilot. I think we had Sony Studios lined up as a possible financier in the States, and I think David was working alongside them, and they just sort of showed him some of the stuff that they had on their slate. And he really liked it. And I remember getting a call from the producer saying, David Schwimmer has seen the pilot, really likes it, and would love to talk to you and Julia about it. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, oh, he's going to phone you at like 7 o'clock. I'm like, okay. And it was obviously ridiculously surreal. And I remember, I think we just had Finn had just been born, and my wife was like next door with Finn. And I remember, like, just at the end of the conversation, just as David was about to sign off, just sort of like bending the phone around towards her ear so she could hear that it was definitely him.
So
but yeah, so we, long story short is, David came over and did some workshops with Julia and I. You know, I don't know how he might have been involved in that show, maybe as a director or as another sort of one of the other, like a showrunner of that show or something like that. But in the end, it didn't get picked up. But David and I had, you know, hit it off, and he'd always said, oh, listen, if you ever have an idea where you think it could justify an American kind of, you know, being in a British sitcom, then, you know, do let me know. And it was about 2 years later, actually, if not a bit more, 2-3 years later, that I had a script commission from Expectation, who make the show. And I wanted to do this sitcom, workplace sitcom set in GCHQ, because I love the idea of a sort of bunch of oddballs, but who had this sort of massive you know, this huge backdrop of national security. So even though they couldn't really function sort of socially and it was very silly, they still had this sort of huge stakes in their world. And then I thought, oh, well, it'd be fun if, you know, an American from the NSA came over to work alongside this quite quintessentially British team. And, you know, there's this big culture clash in the way that the NSA work and the way GCHQ work. And obviously it was like, oh, surely David. And so I sent him maybe even just the outline, not even a script, I think, at that stage.
So did you just, what, did you text him? Did you WhatsApp?
I mean, yeah, I think I did. I think I had his agent's email as well, because we'd been, I think, like I had that through when we were working on Morning Is Broken stuff. And so I had his number. So I texted him and said, look, I'm going to send your agent a treatment. But just, you know, it's this, and just let me know what you think of it, but no pressure, you know, just, and he just got back like kind of the next day and said, yeah, great. When should we shoot it? And I was like, oh, well, it hasn't even been commissioned. Like, into, and then fortunately, you know, he was then attached and, I wrote the pilot, Sky, you know, picked it up, and then we went for it and made two series, and hopefully we get to do some more this year.
You are doing more, aren't you? Or is that a secret?
It's possibly a secret, but I think we're all hoping we all get to do some more this year.
Okay, we've just broken the secret, but I just thought that I think last time I bullied you and you had to say,
I think it's all fine. All that stuff's fine, isn't it? Yeah. I don't think anyone's gonna, you know, yeah. it ended on the biggest cliffhanger in season two. So I think, you know, we can't just end on that. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You have to do more. And yeah. It might be
something a little different than what people are expecting. But yeah, but that's all I'll say. But yeah, hopefully there'll be more.
Oh. Now you've done that. You don't expect me to just leave that.
Well, I am going to leave it.
Okay. We'll leave it because I'm now everything's going in my head. Let's go to Ted Lasso. I remember. So Hannah is a very, very, the goddess. She is a goddess. Yes. That's what I always call her. I always have done. She I've is. Known her for 100 years.
And, I was going to say, do you and Hannah know each other? Yeah, yeah. It strikes me as you two are very similar in you are both goddesses. But listen, she is
you.
A goddess and she is fantastic. Yeah.
Hannah contacted me and said, she was saying, oh, Ted Lasso's about to go on air. And I had Brett, who is now impossible to get hold of. But Brett got in touch with me. He did. So a year earlier, he'd done another show and he contacted me and said, hey, Gabby, can I come on your radio show? Yeah. Then I got, hey, Gabby, there's a show called Ted Lasso. Can I come on radio show? So I had Hannah and Brett come on. And then Brett said, will you come on my podcast? All that.
Yeah.
I mean, now it's the...
Megastars. Absolutely megastars.
But all of you, Ted Lasso is a phenomenon that we miss it. I know that sounds really corny. Where intelligence makes me just fall about laughing. Ted Lasso plays on my heartstrings and I miss it. I miss Ted. I miss all of you telly.
It's so wonderfully written, that show. And I genuinely don't know, you know, coming at it as a writer, you know, I obviously don't write on that show, but I do not know how they managed to walk this tightrope of being able to deliver equally on laughs and emotion and drama as that show does, because it really is triple threat in that respect. And often you'll find that, you know, something will dominate or will undermine the other, and so you kind of get a bit of a mishmash of a show, but it just walks this incredibly fine line. And it's that show's just changed my life, really, you know, in all kinds of ways. I just think it's such a wonderful, you know, the spirit of the show, the kind of the message behind it, you know, the people who've got in contact off the back of watching that show saying that it has in a really positive way affected their mental health, you know, and allowed them to talk about things that they wouldn't usually talk about. And, you know, they took a lot of comfort that, you know, it came out during lockdown, which I think, you know, is at least not the sole reason for the show's success. But I think people discovering it at a time when they were particularly receptive to some of the messages, the positive and hopeful and optimistic messages in the show, you know, definitely, you know, the pandemic plays a part in that. But yeah, I mean, it's just taken on a life of its own, that show. And yeah, we're about to go into season three. And I'm really excited and kind of nervous and all sorts of feelings.
It must, but it's sort of Ted Lasso. Afterlife, The Crown, I mean, Downton, I'm putting that, and I know they're all very different shows, but they've become world phenomenons, the shows that the world is talking about. That must, do you not think about, I remember speaking to lovely Kerry Godleman about Afterlife, and when I said to her, does it blow your mind? She said, actually, Gabby, can you not say that? Because if I think like that, then I can't handle it. Does it feel bit like that about Ted Lasso?
Yeah, and I don't think of, as in we kind of all almost kind of have a pact that we don't really think about it that much. And that comes from the top, really. I remember when we were started filming season two, and particularly in the UK, I think season one, some people had discovered it, but, you know, Apple TV wasn't really as ubiquitous as, I mean, I think it's a lot more commonplace now. And it's certainly commonplace in the States, and it was already kind of a hit in the States. But I think the UK was quite slow to catch up. And I remember when the first sort of load of, I guess a year ago, the first sort of load of awards sort of noise started kind of coming towards the show. And I think Jason had either won the Golden Globe or Screen Actor. He'd won something. And the next day on set, you know, everyone was like giving him round applause. He's like, oh, no, we got work to do. Come on, let's just. And, you know, there's a real kind of humility and sort of humble quality to him and Bill Lawrence, you know, all the, those kind of great kind of creators that, you know, brilliant shows. And they just, you know, they like creating good work, and they're just genuinely touched that it has, you know, translated to so many people, you know, across the world. And they're just really grateful for that. And it does mean that there is suddenly pressure on the show when you sort of think about the amount of people watching it or the scope at which, you know, it sort of is now. I guess that pressure is kind of a privilege in a way, because we're just very fortunate that those castings worked out, and particularly speaking for me and for Brett and Hannah, you know, we're just so lucky that all worked out and we get to be in this wonderful show with wonderful people. And it's a show we can genuinely be proud of because it has got such a strong positive message. You know, I hope that it'll endure, that show, you know, however many seasons it ends up being. But I think it's, you know, it's one of the good ones, and we just feel very, very lucky to be a part of it. But no, I think it's important to not dwell on how popular it is, because it's sort of, and, you know, you get a flavour of it through social media. And, you know, I was filming in the States when the sort of season two was coming to an end, and I was out in sort of, you know, the middle of the desert, really. I was in New Mexico in Albuquerque filming, and it was weird. I kind of couldn't go out without being recognised, and it was just odd because I was just like, I'm literally feel like I'm in the middle of nowhere, but people have seen this show and want to talk about it and, you know, want pictures. And I've never really had that, you know, even at the height of intelligence going out, you know, I've never had that. And partly because I stay quite private, but it's just, you know, it's it's an absolute phenomenon, really. It's mad.
So but you got a bit of abuse, and not you, but Nate, because Nate turned. Yeah. But that's how brilliant the writing is, and your acting, of course, they go hand in hand. But and I remember.
Well, no, I think the writing is what leads it. But you're
okay, no, hand in hand. But I've seen Jason talking about that as well, and saying that the reaction was extraordinary. It was like, Nate can't do what? Because Nate, everybody fell in love with, and then Nate suddenly turned. Nate was not very nice.
And it's, and what, and the reason why I just talk about the writing, you know, really highlight the writing, is that it was so planned, you know, right from the off. They were like,
oh, you knew,
I knew from before even seasons two and three had been picked up, you know, before we were making like episode three of season one, and Jason sat down and said, okay, so this is the story, the sort of three season arc effectively. And, you know, we absolutely need to fall in love with him in season one. And then by season two, we need to hate him. And I was like, okay. And, you know, they absolutely stayed true to their word as writers. And I felt that, you know, like you're saying on social media, there was a lot of Nate hate. And you know, there's been some stories saying that I got personally, that I was kind of like, you know, got some kind of hate, and I didn't at all. I didn't, absolutely everyone I got who was on Twitter, you know, always respected the fact that it was an acting job. But
they
absolutely but couldn't step, but then you hear those horror stories, don't you, people not quite seeing the difference between an actor and the character. But they, you know, they absolutely detested where Nate had gone. And I just responded by saying, well, that's correct. You know, you should be feeling that because what he has done is absolutely scandalous. And he's absolutely biting the hand that feeds him. And, you know, he's turned on the person who sort of managed to sort of break him out of that sort of shell, really. So, you know, it's, we're in the middle of his journey. I don't know for definite where it's all heading. I know,
yes, you do. You just said, yes, you do. Sorry, you can't lie
You caught me out. You caught me out. I haven't done an interview in a long time. So,
yeah, but I don't want to know. It's not I'm going to ask you. With intelligence, I was intrigued. With this, because I'm so invested, as a family, we're so invested in Ted Lasso, that I don't want to know. I'm just going to wait to lap it up. And also, in fact, while we're speaking, Hannah is on the aeroplane. But yesterday, I spoke to Hannah, and she told me a wonderful story. She told me, because I said, can you please tell me something about lovely Nick and on set? Yeah. And she left me a voice note that I won't play because there's a whole message to me. But then on it, so she said, I have to just remind you of Rebecca's the funeral.
Yes.
She said you can't look at each other in the eye and you completely and utterly lost it.
No, I find, I don't know what it is, but there's a sort of a sparkle in. You kind of have it with certain actors. It's like definitely a sparkle in Hannah's eye. Yes. I think Jeremy, who plays Higgins, he's got it as well, where you can just sort of see this sort of almost like a raised eyebrow, but in the eye, like you can see that they're kind of twinkling underneath. And it just sets me off. And I just love trying to sort of prod and provoke and try. I sort of just sort of switch things up a little bit by, you know, just try and make them laugh, basically. It's quite unprofessional, but Hannah is really receptive to it, and but it did get to the point in that scene where, you know, Jenny obviously meant to be upset and I meant to be offering condolences because it's her dad's funeral, but we actually physically couldn't look each other in the eye to do the scene, so I was like looking just off, like just to the left of her eye line. But then that was making her laugh more because then I was still speaking to her, but just not really looking at her. And she found that it just looked even weirder and made her laugh. So yeah, she's a, you know, yeah, she's a one. But you know, I mean, I feel like I get it in the firing line because often I had, was particularly in season one, had a lot of scenes with Jason and Brendan, who played Ted and Coach Beard. And you know, they go back, as in the Jason and Brendan go back, you know, forever, and, you know, from like their old improv days, and they're so, you know, they can just bounce off each other, and because they're the creators and writers of the show, they'll just change the ends of scenes without telling me, and they'll just throw in extra things, and I'll just get caught in this firing line and usually end the scene by bursting out laughing and not being able to handle it. So yeah, so you know, I'm not the only guilty one, but yeah, it was good to hear that Hannah remembers that.
I will send you the recording because she absolutely loses it on the a voice note saying that you had to say something about training wheels coming off a bike and she was doing
I'm trying to sort of say this really serious quote like fathers are the training wheels of the bike of something, and then I sort of fizzle out. I can't remember it word for word, but yeah, I remember it was a funny day that day.
See, that's a joy. What a joy to be able to go to work and feel like that. Your parents,
very lucky.
Solicitor and GP, and then suddenly this Emmy nominated son just, and as you say, you're filming. Was that the Maggie Moore film that you were filming?
It was.
I mean, please.
With Tina Fey and John Slattery. Yeah, I mean, and John Hamm and John Slattery was directing it, which is a dream, absolute dream. I mean, you know, I love all of them. And yeah, I don't know how that came about. It was just sort of, yeah, it was really weird. I remember getting sent the script and they're like, oh, they're really interested in you for this part. And I was like, do I have to audition? And they were like, well, maybe, just have a meeting with the director. But I didn't have to do any of the lines. And I just chatted to John Slattery for about half an hour. And we just chatted about, we didn't really chat about the film. We just sort of chatted about nice stuff. And then a few weeks later, they're like, oh, yeah, no, they've offered it to you. And I was like, what? So it was kind of, yeah, that was mad. And then I just went to the desert for 6 weeks and kind of desperately missed the family. So it's sort of a mixed emotions for me. But the work, I was really proud of, you know, it's unlike anything I'd done before. It was, of course, sort of tarnished by the absolute tragedy of the Rust shooting that happened, you know, only miles up the road. It was a different film to what we were doing, but some of our crew,
oh my god,
knew the crew on that, and so it was just, you know, it's a sort of not a very nice time to you know, being the thick of all that, and you know, there was certainly an atmosphere of crikey, this is dreadful and so deeply tragic. But yeah, other than that, sorry.
What an extraordinary time. So you're stuck in the desert, you're missing your family, you're working with John Hamm and Tina Fey. People are stopping you in the street because you're Nate, and this awful thing's happening.
I know, it's actually the season finale of Ted Lasso. It was a real mixed bag of things kind of going on. But, you know, I don't want to sort of, you know, take any
No, but that's what I mean, going back to, you know, your solicitor dad and GP mom, and then a few years later, I mean, you say they were doing Edinburgh. I mean, you went off to Durham, you joined the Footlights, you did all of those things. And then, wow, you're in the middle of the desert and people are wanting you. Isn't it wonderful what life can do?
It's a strange old thing. And like the best thing, like my mum and dad have always been really supportive. And it was definitely, you know, a bit of a big deal when I decided to, because I was doing a PhD at Cambridge, and I decided to quit I still did an MPhil, but I decided to just not do the full kind of 3-year thing. And I said, oh, I think I'm going to have a go at doing comedy, which, you know, and they were like, you're going to do what? But they were still very supportive of it. But they were naturally, as I think any parent would be, you know, a bit like, okay, well, you know, you see how that works out. Because, you know, there was absolutely no guarantee, and there wasn't any guarantees. And, you know, as soon as I moved to London, I had to very much get a normal job. I was gigging in the evening and in the summers doing Edinburgh, the festival, but I wasn't really earning a living from it. And it was a number of years, you know, 5-6 years before I turned professional. And, you know, it was not really until sort of 2012, I guess, that I sort of kind of count myself as doing this for a living. And, you know, so I've done, you know, doing it 10 years now. So now it feels a little bit more normal. But the best thing about my mum and dad is that they do not, and rightly so, they do not sort of treat any of that sort of glitzy stuff any different. They will treat everyone the same. They're not kind of sort of starstruck in any kind of way. They're not kind of, they don't really, you know, I could be, you know, I was really fortunate and so lucky and grateful to sort of go to the Emmys, but I could have just sort of been going, you know, to Wagamama. And that's not to like kind of like do Wagamama down or anything, but
no,
they were just like, they were just like, oh yeah, right, how was it, or what was the food like, oh okay, right, okay, see you later, but you know, they'll, it's all very, oh, and what they've been up to and gone to church and this person says hi, and you know, they do not, it's great, it's really good, because and it's same with my wife. Actually, my wife's a music teacher, not part of, you know, acting or anything like that. So we can just talk about completely different things and share these sort of weird and wonderful stories from each of our lives without it being, you know, no one's blowing hot air up my bum, basically.
No,
if anything,
so
they're blowing very, very cold air.
No, but that's properly nice. No, but that's normal. I've always said I'm very lucky because my best friend, who's been my best friend since we were 16, she's never said, oh, who did you interview? Who did you meet? Oh, where did you film?
Yeah.
She always just says, how's work? It's, I go, yeah, no, work was great today, thank you. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's that.
Likewise. You know, just occasionally they're like, ooh, this person said this because they bought this and, you know, or they saw you had a DVD or something, you're on a DVD extra or something. And that's always like a nice little thing to kind of get like a nice little nugget. But yeah, on the whole, it's just very, very straightforward. You know, even when I was in New Mexico, it was just like, oh, so what's the food like? Are you going to meet up with any of your relatives? And I was like, well, they're in Canada and I'm in New Mexico. So yeah, no, it's all good though.
Now, magic is the other thing, which is such a huge part of your life. So I was watching you doing magic because you were talking about your book online, The Young Magicians and the Thieves Almanac. And you did a 3-card trick.
Oh, yeah.
Blue and red. And I don't know how you did it. I watched it again and again and again. I called my youngest and I said, because she loves magic, I said, watch this. And she said, oh, I know how it's done. And then she told me and I said, no, that's not how it's done. She went, actually, I don't think that is right. Magic.
Oh, wow. That's
no,
nice,
but here's the thing about magic. We all want to guess how it's done, but nobody really wants to know.
Yeah, that's a sweet spot, isn't it? That's when magic is good. Like, you know, there's plenty of quite naff magic out there, which is sort of almost like a puzzle that is almost waiting to be solved and inevitably solved because there can be no other way. But I think good magic, you know, and I'm not talking about that three card. That's great if you're fooled by that three card trick.
Oh,
but,
I love it.
You know, I mean, like proper kind of good magic, you know, when you're seeing it, especially when you're seeing it live, when you're like, I just don't know how. You just buy into that suspension of disbelief because we know there must be a method. There must be a method because, you know, real magic doesn't exist or so we say. But
it does exist.
But I've always loved
the
that.
Magic circle or whatever, but so you of course it exists.
but I again, it goes back to sort of childhood and sort of making people laugh. I've always loved that feeling of not knowing how something works and, you know, being able to sort of fool people but with magic and sort of sharing that kind of moment of astonishment or amazement, you know, when a trick reaches its conclusion. You know, I love that feeling and I still love it, you know, both performing it, which I do less now that kind of acting and comedy has taken over, but I still, you know, I'm still always reading about magic and I love going to watch it and see performances and, you know, I adore it.
I will carry on doing your magic. We always ask people about what makes them belly laugh, but I'd like to slightly switch this for you because when was the last time you completely, you know, when you laugh cry, when you probably lost it?
Probably probably a few nights ago, because my wife makes me laugh the most. And it's often like quite late at night, like we've quite tired, you know, after, you know, the kids have gone down and we've eaten and then we've maybe watched a bit of telly and we've chatted and then we'll go to bed. And then this isn't going to be like a dodgy story, by the way. I just sort of realized it sounds like
I was thinking, where's
the setup for something. And she'll just do this. She just does this thing. She'll find this really funny now that I'm broadcasting this, but she does this thing where she will kind of go to the side of like my side of the bed, like pretend that she's sort of like getting really kind of cozy, but sort of just nudging ever so like inch by inch kind of closer to my side of the bed, and I'm like often like just sort of just reading or something, but to the point where she kind of just gets so close that I'm basically being pushed out of the bed, and I know that she's sort of doing it and she just finds it so funny because it really riles me up, and I often get, because I'm quite tired, just delirious with like, I just don't like why we're still doing this, and it, even thinking about it now making me laugh, but yeah, I often kind of cry laugh at that because it is just utterly bonkers, and at the worst point of the day to be kind of trying to expel that much energy and like that. I mean, it usually makes me, I just fall asleep instantly after that because I'm so tired from cry laughing or whatever.
You know,
but that,
yeah. Many other couples might do something else to make themselves fall away instantly at that time of night. But I love that your wife is trying to push you out of bed. It makes you laugh so much that you fall instantly asleep. Nick, in every single way, you've just made my week. You really have. You are such a joy. Thanks so much.
Gabby. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening. Coming up next week, the singer-songwriter Jack Savaretti. That Gabby Roslin podcast is proudly produced by Cameo Productions and music by Beth Macari. Could you please tap the follow or subscribe button? And thank you so much for your amazing reviews. We honestly read every single one of them and they mean the world to us. Thank you so much for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.